It is Thursday, June 28th at 1 p.m., which can only mean one thing. It is time for Family Business Radio. Each week through Family Business Radio, we're showcasing family businesses and building a community designed to educate, support, and inform family-owned business. Each week, our guests include the actual family business owners, key executive non-family members who are helping to drive those businesses, and the trusted professional advisors that assist them. I am your host, Meredith Moore, with Moore & Associates Wealth Management, and I would like to welcome our esteemed guest, Andy Nations, who is the CEO of B&D Industrial. Welcome.
Oh, thank you, Meredith. Appreciate you having me.
Yeah, I'd give you a big drum roll, but you're kind of laid-back kind of guy like that.
No drum rolls necessary.
Yeah, exactly. So let's start for our guests who might not know what B&D Industrial, let's start with the bare bones basics. What is B&D Industrial?
Okay. We're what you would call an industrial distributor.
Okay.
Which means we buy from manufacturers of motors, industrial bearings, gearing, automation equipment, that sort of thing. And we sell to the end user, the end user being industrial plants that have machinery.
Okay.
That need our parts and our services.
Okay. Now, do you guys actually, you aren't the ones that actually make those parts, though. Is that correct?
Right. We are not a manufacturer. Okay. We are a distributor.
We would never call you a rep, per se. It's always distributor is the appropriate term, if you will.
Yeah, rep would not be good.
Got it. Okay. Just making sure I got to get my lingo right. In every industry, we kind of have the no-nos and so forth. So where do you all get, where do you get the parts or the equipment from that you actually distribute?
Well, there are a lot of manufacturers of different types of parts and equipment we sell. We have 30 really primary suppliers, but we buy from several hundred suppliers at different times. So, and those are some in the U.S. and some in other countries.
Are you seeing more of a shift to China, as many other industries have seen, in terms of cost and labor and all of that?
Well, there's been a lot of our suppliers have plants in China and other countries, but lately there does seem to be a shift back to the U.S. a little bit. So,
why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's just the pendulum kind of swinging back. Some of the freight cost and other uncertainties in some countries are, disadvantages, so some of the suppliers are coming back closer to the, where the market is.
And we talked about this before the show, but if you're shipping from overseas, I would imagine stuff comes through the port here in Savannah. Is that right? Maybe not.
Yes, it does. I mean, we normally would not be importing directly. Our supplier would import it.
Got it. Okay.
Or maybe assemble it here, and then we would buy it.
Okay, got it. And so you have guys within the business that will assemble the different pieces and parts for your clients directly. Is that the situation?
Yes, we have people. Our expertise would be to apply the parts to start with, to find the right applications, and then come up with solutions. We're all about solutions. So sometimes you take different components, put them together, make a conveyor system, or make a some kind of material handling system, or create a control environment for a factory floor where you are controlling the drives and so forth. So
it's rare that your actual end user or your client is going to need what exactly you've ordered. It requires B&D's expertise to kind of jerry-rig an appropriate solution.
There's kind of two sides to it. I mean, there's some off-the-shelf parts replacement. That's really the original core business. But more and more we've gotten into, like you said, putting things together and building systems and coming up with solutions for the clients.
Now, how big are your clients? Are you talking small types of businesses?
Well, we're talking wide range. Anything from a mom-and-pop shop that, does machine work to Fortune 500 manufacturers. So.
That's great. And then what would prevent, say, a Fortune 500 company from going direct to that manufacturer as opposed to going through you guys?
Well, the reason for our channel, is again, industrial distribution is, you know, that we do serve a purpose between the manufacturer and the end user.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, you know, having inventory in some cases, having people that have knowledge of the products and how to apply them. It's just not feasible really for manufacturers to take all that on and also be in the business of manufacturing. So.
Right, and I guess the way you all have scaled, you have the ability to do that and obviously be successful at it.
Right, that's the idea.
So tell me about the history of BND. Let's start from the very beginning.
Okay, the very beginning.
Bring me on back.
Okay, we started actually in 1947.
Okay.
When my dad bought a business in Griffin, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
It was named Travis Belding, and he renamed that to Bearings and Drives.
Okay. What are drives? Sorry.
Well, drives would be, could be as simple as like on a bicycle where you've got a chain running between the front and the back gears. And
right. Okay.
So it drives, turns a shaft or drives something. So that's where they came up with the name. And he bought that business and the original price, the original investment was $9,000. Wouldn't get you much today, would it?
No, not very far at all.
But he bought that, and then in 1950, moved it from Griffin to Macon.
Okay.
Decided there just wasn't enough business around Griffin, and the transportation and logistics were better in Macon than Griffin. So.
And why is that?
Well, Macon was just more of a central hub.
Right, okay, yeah. Got it. It's easier to get around the state
right.
and so
mm-hmm.
forth. Okay. So you guys, or your dad moved the business to Macon in 1950.
Right.
And how old were you at this point?
6 months old.
Okay. So you weren't out there working, selling stuff.
I don't recall that. But
yeah.
Interestingly, we do have one employee that's still with us that was on that trip. He was on that move and said he carried me in his lap. So
did he really?
I have to trust him on that. I don't know.
That's got to be weird being the CEO and you have an employee that says that. So you moved to Macon, and what noticeable differences and shifts were there in the business at that point, especially with being more centrally located and so forth?
Well, we started growing rapidly, and whereas the first years in Griffin were pretty lean, I think the first month in Macon was almost as big as previous years had been. So there was a rapid growth there. And then 1956 opened the first branch location outside of the headquarters, and that was in Atlanta.
Now, when you in Macon, now did your dad acquire property at that point to house the business, or did he need places? I think you had mentioned being able to inventory, the
right.
store inventory.
Yeah, he leased building, or leased a building,
okay.
Warehouse and office, and then that was in 1950, and then moved from that location to where we are now.
Mm-hmm.
After, I guess, I'm not sure exactly what year, 55, something like that.
Okay, and then what's the nature of the office in Macon? At this point, it's, like you
well,
said, there's...
our corporate headquarters is there.
Okay.
You know, all the accounting, financial functions, mm-hmm. human resources, all that's in Macon.
Okay.
We also, our B&D service, which is one of our divisions, which I'm sure we'll talk about,
mm-hmm.
is located there. Their original place is located there. And then we also have a couple of branch offices there, one Bearings and Drives and one Scale Systems. So we have several buildings there together.
What are the functions of the branch offices?
Just getting closer to the customers.
Okay, so their job is to basically reach out there to the community with people that are potential clients where you guys can be supply
right.
them, distribute
and,
to them.
Right, and obviously we have salespeople, and we have warehouse material in these branches and
okay.
service, you know, generally service about a 50 to 60 mile radius.
Okay, and does it make sense? I guess it has to make sense if you're storing or inventorying materials in some of these branches, but I would guess it would really depend on the size of the client base in that region and what you should still keep hubbed
oh, yeah.
in Macon versus out at the branches.
Right, it can vary quite a bit, just depending on what industries in each area.
Okay, so 1956 was your first branch in Atlanta.
Right.
And where in Atlanta was that, just out of curiosity?
Cheshire Bridge.
Okay, well, Debbie, I suspect you don't have the same space that you did in 1956.
No, that's changed.
Yeah.
We've been in several locations over the years, but now we have, in the Atlanta area, we have a branch in Hapeville out close to the airport.
Okay.
We have one up in Kennesaw,
mm-hmm.
and then in Norcross. We just moved to a location in Norcross a couple of years ago, what we refer to as our first mega branch,
okay.
which is simply saying we took different locations, divisions, put them together under one roof.
For collaboration purposes, it sounds like.
Right, collaboration and, you know, a lot of good reasons.
And that would be, collaboration I would think would be important, not for your clients that were, like you said, where the core business was, where they were kind of buying it off the shelf, but where your client actually needed a solution. Is that?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we've got our, what we call our technical solutions group housed in Norcross there.
Okay.
So we've got about 10 people there that are either electrical engineers or machine vision experts, different expertise, programmers.
Mm-hmm.
They're all located there, whereas they used to be scattered among our four divisions and really didn't have an opportunity to get a lot of synergy.
How were you able to handle those synergistic relationships within the mega branches to where they truly are collaborating with these different kind of lenses that they're seeing the project? I mean, what does that look like?
Well, I think some of it happens naturally just from being in such close proximity to each other. Mm-hmm. Some of it you have to encourage.
Right.
But generally, you get people like that, of that mindset together, they're going to end up working together and helping each other.
Okay. And I would suspect that's resulted in better, longer lasting, more relationships with clients, being able to kind of think outside the box where they're not able, the client's not able to necessarily do that.
Right. And it's also a good place to bring prospective customers or customers to see what our capabilities are all in one location.
And I would suspect that also leads to more core business because they know you all have the skill set and the ability if they need something that's a little more out of the box.
Yeah, that's definitely pull through with the core products when
right.
when you design a system, yeah.
Okay. And so the first branch was in Atlanta. And so it looks like, so you were, what, right around 9 or 10 at this point, so...
Something like that.
Yeah.
I wasn't too worried about the business. No.
Yeah. So when did you start getting involved?
Well, I actually started working in 1965 when I turned 16 that summer.
Okay.
I went to work in the warehouse as well as making deliveries. As a matter of fact, that's when I learned to drive a straight shift. Manual transmission. I was a trial and error with the truck, but we didn't have automatic trucks, so
interesting.
I had to learn to do that.
You didn't have Dad sitting right there walking you through like the other teenagers. It was
no, just
get in the big rig and do your deal.
Just probably burned up a few clutches, but
that's so.
It was a good experience, and we worked in the summers through the rest of high school and college, and then when I graduated from the University of Georgia in 1971, I came full time.
Now, at 16, I mean, you're a teenage kid. I mean, what was your take? You grew up in the business. Was it just
right.
kind of a given that you were going to have to help Dad in the business at this point?
No, not really. I did not plan on that.
Okay.
I did decide to major in business when I went to Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And later, actually, well, I got a BBA, but I majored in finance. But... I wasn't sure that I wanted to come into the family business.
No, but at 16, was your dad paying you, or was it just something to do, or, I know it's been a while.
I got $1.25 an hour was my initial wage.
You were banking some good money then, huh?
Well, I probably had more spending money then than I do now, so.
Yeah. So you're making a little bit of extra money, you're helping Dad, and did he encourage you to go to UGA? Or to get the business degree, or how did that play out?
Not really. You know, he pretty much left it up to me, to what I wanted to do. He had attended Georgia Tech, so he didn't encourage me to go to University of Georgia, but
got it.
It worked out that way. As a matter of fact, got a sister that graduated from there, too.
Okay.
And three daughters now.
Well, there you go.
But,
so you're a born-bred bulldog at this point, then.
That's right.
Okay. And so I guess you were naturally drawn to finance. Is that what? But you hadn't really dealt with it in the family business at this point.
No, I had not dealt with it in the family business, but I was always good in math. And I just, as I got into college and started taking business courses, those were the easiest for me. So I figured that might be the one to major in.
I can relate. So you started doing this, and as you were going through coursework, and we've heard this a lot more from Generation 2, but were you starting to see, not necessarily case studies, but you peripherally knew some stuff about BND at this point, but did you see how that applied to what you were learning? Or was it still kind of too far removed at that point?
I would say a little too far removed.
Okay.
Didn't really see the practical application until I started working later on.
Okay. Now, so you graduated.
I did.
What happened next? Did you go work in the family business, or was it still, hey, I'm going to go do my own deal? And
well, I was trying to decide whether or not to get a master's, MBA, and talked to one of the advisors there, and he really encouraged me to, if I was going to go into the family business, go ahead and go. He thought I would learn more 2 years there than I would with an MBA, and
I suspect he was probably right, too.
And I also was still thinking about going to work for a bank.
Okay.
Because at the time, a lot of graduates, it was actually banking and finance was a major. A lot of them went for banks, and if you got in a bank's management program, at that time, you could make $750 a month. That's $9,000 a year.
Good coin at that time,
that was
huh?
good coin. But anyway, I did decide to go into the family business. Obviously saw that, I might have opportunities there that I wouldn't have or would be harder to get otherwise. So,
right.
Still wasn't sure for a couple of years if I'd done the right thing, but then it kind of took.
What did Dad say through this whole thing?
He was always good. He was never one that was looking over your shoulder or trying to tell you what to do.
Right.
He kind of subtly tried to lead you certain ways, maybe, but... But he didn't really put the pressure on.
Where it's like you can come up with the idea yourself, but
he's
putting it out there.
A little help.
Got it. Okay. And was your mom supportive one way or another at this point? Or?
You know, looking back on it, I think she was happy to see that. I didn't really, she didn't express that much at the time, but
right.
I know she liked having me back in Macon.
Right, sure. So. Of course. And So you came back to the family business at that
right,
point.
I did.
And what did you have to do? You weren't sweeping floors and driving trucks, or maybe you were at this point still?
Not so much then. That's what I'd done prior to that. Right. I pretty much went into what we called, at the time, called inside sales, which
okay.
is customer service. Most of the business comes in, still a lot of it comes in over the telephone.
Right.
So that was the primary job there was... being there and answering the phone and trying to help the customer.
And I would guess that you got to know some of the main customers. That was the best way to kind of entree you in.
Yeah, that started building relationships and a very good way to learn. Also, although I knew a little bit about our products, it's a great way to learn when somebody's on the phone and you got to get them an answer. So.
What was the culture like at that point with other employees that knew you were the son? And Daddy was running the business.
Yeah. Well, I would say overall they were very accepting, looking back on it. I think it just, I always felt like that I needed to prove myself to be better than you would normally be, you know. Just,
right.
Because I didn't want to have anybody thinking I just was given what I got. So.
Right. And you don't think you were held to a higher standard or... By your dad? You held yourself to a higher standard,
yeah,
but...
I did, and I'm sure he probably did, too.
Yeah. And so how did your career within the company evolve over time?
Well, I started out in that position, inside sales, and then I did move into having some responsibility over accounting.
Mm-hmm.
I did have the degree in that, you know, in finance, so right. That was kind of a natural progression.
Were you working closely with a controller or a CFO?
There was no controller or CFO, so
okay.
It was me and my dad basically doing the financial side of things.
Hmm.
But
well, that had to be great given your degree, and again, yeah. Here's real-life case studies right here.
Well, I went back at that time and took some more accounting courses, more advanced accounting courses, and
right.
That was when I really saw how it applied to the real world, and so those were good for me. But through that, it became apparent that we really needed something other than our old bookkeeping system. We needed a computer.
Right.
And
the old punch cards.
Right. We had had a NCR billing machine, we called it.
Yeah.
For a number of years, and so in 1974 or 1975 we started looking around, and I was in that position. So we did get an IBM System 3, and
those weren't cheap either then.
No, it was a pretty good investment, really.
Yeah.
Not a lot of capacity by today's standards,
right,
but
sure.
But we did that, and of course at that time IBM was very helpful in. There weren't so many software packages around.
Right.
But they would help you, you know, if you needed to write some code. And so anyway, I ended up going through IBM schools to be a programmer, which
wow.
were held here in Atlanta. And okay. When I first started, we had punch cards.
Right.
And then we advanced to what we call floppy disk.
Right.
So.
I remember those big 8-inchers or
yeah.
whatever they were.
Yep. Didn't think you were old enough for that.
Yeah, I am.
But. So that was a good experience for me. I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed the challenge of it.
Mm-hmm.
And primarily what we did then was put our accounting, bookkeeping system on the computer. It wasn't really used so much in the other part of the business at that time. But
and you guys were using some of those metrics to look at performance and, hey, what can we be doing better, that kind of thing?
Right. Looking at that.
What would you say that with some of the technologies then that you guys brought to the business, what difference or what impact did that have on the business at that point in time?
Well, it was definitely a productivity increase.
Okay. How
versus
so?
Versus the old method. Just not that you didn't have to input data, which you obviously did, but
right.
I think it was just less, more efficient, less prone to error. So it's... you know, it was a big step for us at the time.
Were you tracking at that point? Was there you're constantly analyzing the different branches and, hey, is it cost effective for us to keep certain branches? And, hey, how much inventory do we need to be maintaining? And
yeah, it enabled us to start doing that in a more, you know, business-like manner.
Right.
Instead of writing it, keeping up with it on a notepad.
Right, sure.
You know, we had, we developed profit and loss statements for each location and
right.
track their investments, including inventory. And so we had a way to evaluate and a more accurate way to reward people that
okay.
were performing well.
Yeah, it's technology can do a lot for a business as
yeah.
it continues to advance. So were more branches even developed now at this point once you were active?
Yeah, we started, I think when I started in 1971, we were just about to open our 7th location.
Mm-hmm.
And all those had grown just kind of geographically out from Macon, which is central part of Georgia.
Right, sure.
And as we developed the territory, we saw the potential and maybe opened a location. So I think we opened the 7th one a couple of months after I started. And then throughout the 70s and 80s, continued to add. We had... a few acquisitions, but most were just branches we opened on our own.
How would you determine, not necessarily the demographic, or how would you determine if an area warranted another branch?
Well, usually what happened was we might have a salesperson traveling and calling on that area.
Right.
And so you get a sense for what's there, what the potential is. And
hey, we need more we need more guys. There's other businesses
right.
kind of thing.
There's
okay.
a lot of potential here. And it was, you know, pretty fast growth. A lot of industry moving from the north at that time,
right?
South. So southeast has been a great part of the country to be in for a long time.
Yeah. Well, and it makes sense, like you said, being in the central part of the state on top of that. It's just kind of worked out well in that respect. So you developed your technology skills. You were actually writing code, trying to develop some of these reports and metrics and tracking the business development. And you were actively working with your dad. What was your position at that point?
Well, I became secretary treasurer of the company.
This was, you said, in 1971?
That was in the mid-70s.
Yeah, okay.
Mid to late 70s, and then progressed from there.
Did your role change after that?
Well, started changing some, yeah.
Okay.
A little more out with the people in the locations as opposed to just in the back office.
Right, sure. And it was so more operations
kind of
deal.
Yeah.
So you really, with where you started and being able to see all the different aspects of the business, I would suspect that gave you just a phenomenal view on how things work, from inside sales to understanding the finance side of things.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a great way to learn, basically starting at the bottom and being exposed to all aspects of the business.
Did you and your dad talk about some sort of deliberate succession and the fact that he was grooming you at that point, or was it unspoken?
Well, maybe I should back up for just a minute. Mm-hmm. When I was in college and I was trying to decide what to do,
right?
I remember having a conversation with my dad, and I told him that I really wanted to do something where I would be able to help people.
Right.
And being idealistic and young. And
I think that's what every college student says.
So he told me, he said, well, that's what we do in our business. He said, we got people that we employ and families they support and, you know, opportunities for people to grow in their careers. And up to that point, I never really thought about that.
Right.
So that's
probably just thinking on the pieces and parts side of
right.
it. And, yeah, what impact am just, I going to have
yeah.
on the world? Yeah.
So that's what got me to thinking about, you know, maybe coming into the business.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, we had conversations off and on over the years. He was not a big talker. He led by example.
Right.
And, I mean, you knew where he stood for sure. But,
right.
But it was great having him. And over the years, he gradually decreased his role as mine increased.
But did you all have any, if you knew where he stood, was there any deliberate discussion saying, hey, Andy, at some point I want you to run this, or I'm going to want to retire, or?
Yeah, yeah. And the way he did that was when he turned 65,
mm-hmm.
which was, I think, 1983,
mm-hmm.
he named me president, and I became president, and he became chief executive officer. And then when he turned 75, 10 years later,
mm-hmm.
he gave up the CEO title to just be chairman of the board, and I took the CEO title. So, yeah, that was the plan.
How was it perceived by the employees? It sounds like you had just gradually been involved in the business slowly, steadily, so it seemed like a very organic move that you would be CEO. Or even
yeah,
be present
think,
before that.
I think it was, although I was still pretty young at the time.
How old were you? 1980? Okay, yeah, I'm sitting here. Everybody's going to do the math. Everybody's
sure.
going to know how old Indian Nations is.
34, I think.
Oh, my God. So you were president at 34?
34, yeah. And
that's a big deal.
But, like you said, I had been working there to some extent since I was 16.
Right.
And you know, I think I had been able to earn some respect. It certainly was a better situation than somebody just, you know, somebody coming in off the street without the background.
Right. The so when your dad, the first time he stepped back, so when this was, you said in 93, he was the CEO?
93 is
you,
when he...
You were the president.
He relinquished CEO and became chairman of the board, yeah.
How, and then, I mean, what did his role, I mean, obviously it's a different title, but did things really change in terms of culture or what he
did? They did somewhat. He never was wanted to look over anybody's shoulder, that whether your family or otherwise, he, you know, gave you a job to do and expects you to do it. And so you were held accountable whether you did it or not.
But right.
He wasn't there to, you know, point you a certain way at a certain time. But so that was his nature anyway. But, yeah, starting in 93, he got less and less involved in the day-to-day operations. I mean, he was still very involved in, you know, looking at the financial side of it, the strategic side of the picture, but really wasn't, you know, less and less involved in the actual day-to-day operations.
Did you ever find yourself using him as kind of a sounding board?
Oh, yeah. He was a great sounding board.
Yeah. And like you said, you knew where he stood, so yeah. You got an opinion back pretty quick.
Yeah, usually, usually you know the answer before you ask it.
But. Got it. So your dad stepped back and at some point here you got married and you started having children.
All right.
And so let's progress back to that point. When did you get married?
Got married in 75.
Okay.
Hope that's right. I think that's right.
Yeah, well, it's just, she might be listening right now. was your wife active in the business in any aspect from day one or
no, she was in nursing.
Okay, got it. And you guys had kids.
We had kids.
How many children?
First one in 76. Had three daughters.
Well, see, I'm older than your youngest, or then I'm older than your oldest.
Okay.
Yeah. And three daughters. So did they work in the business at all? I mean, this is like a perceived, again, as an outsider, almost a blue-collar kind of business, if you're or a business for men.
Well, yes, it has traditionally been for men. You're right. That has changed a lot, but for a long time it was. But they worked, all three of them worked in the summers in the office in clerical positions.
Right.
My oldest, after working part of one summer, said it was the worst job she'd ever had. Of course, it was the only job she'd ever had. But
yeah.
But I think they discovered through that. Of course, they did learn, obviously, just from being in a work environment. But
sure.
I think they discovered they didn't like filing and thought they wanted to do something else.
Did they realize, I would imagine, too, it would be interesting because they might realize who you were. I mean, it's a little different when it's your dad, but it's dad with a number of employees and people looking up to your dad. Did you notice kind of a greater awareness of who you were professionally with your girls?
I think there may have been some of that. Of course, with teenage girls, it doesn't always, doesn't always show like that.
Yeah.
Now, my youngest daughter is involved in business today, so.
Okay. And what's her name?
Lauren.
Lauren. Okay. Lauren. And what does Lauren do for the business right now?
Well, Lauren actually somewhat of a jack of all trades, but she's become very proficient on our software system, which we just went to a new package about 3 or 4 years ago.
You left the old IBM package, huh?
Well, we still ran on IBM, but
do
yes,
really?
Different
okay.
software.
Yeah.
And she's done that, and she's she helps from financial side of things, evaluating, you know, what we're doing and helping us measure how we're doing.
Did, with each of the girls going to UGA, did they go through any part of what you went through where they had to really make a decision, hey, do I want to go into the family business or do I want to do something outside?
Well, I don't think that was hard for the oldest two. They didn't really want to go into business. They had, you know, other ideas. One of them was majored in speech. And the other was in journalism school. And now since then, they've both those have moved on to be full-time moms.
Right, sure.
With a couple of children each. But, yeah, I don't, they just never were inclined that way. The youngest always was inclined toward business, so I think.
Did Lauren get her business degree at UGA?
Right, she did.
Okay, and then what did her progression look like after she graduated?
Well, she graduated and then, trying to remember now, she went to work for a brokerage firm. She ended up working for what you might call a private equity firm here in Atlanta.
Sure.
For a few years and then came to work with us about 5 years ago.
Okay. So back in 2007, and now did she go straight into what she's doing right now, or did you like you said, I mean, she's dealing with software, but have you been grooming her in a similar way that your dad did, where you've had her in different parts of the business, or?
Tried to get her exposed to different parts, yeah. She's, you know, today we have her and two nephews, a niece and a son-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
So there's actually five involved in the family business, and each one is, you know, followed different paths, but has been exposed to different areas of the business. Certainly a lot larger business than when I was coming along.
Right. Now, your son-in-law is Tim, right?
Tim. Mm-hmm.
So what was his background?
His background was with IBM.
Right.
He graduated from Auburn, unfortunately, and worked for IBM, I guess, for 8 or 10 years, and and then came on board with us about four or five years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the two nephews, Ben and Brian,
mm-hmm.
actually, when they got through college, came into our business and worked. We both started out working in inside sales.
And are in inside sales at this point was different than when you were there. So are they out at the branches or are they at headquarters?
At the branches.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so each branch has their own inside salesperson or persons.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Of course, today, you know, you've got a lot more communication by email, fax, and, you know, other methods other than just telephone, but.
Right. So did any of the nephews or family members, had they started earlier other than the last 5 years? Were they slowly integrated through school, or was it, hey, we're out there, we have a job, maybe we should go talk to, you know, Uncle Andy or something?
Well, the first one to come into it was in 99. Courtney is my niece, and
mm-hmm.
I recruited her heavily because at the time, we were wanting to get into more into international business. We had customers here in the U.S. that either had plants or had relationships with plants, particularly in South America.
Right.
And at the time, her background had been some international. She was working with a company in Charlotte doing some importing. And so finally got her to come on board, and we started up that international side of the business, which has evolved and changed. That was originally in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Now we operate that out of Tampa.
Yeah, I would imagine it'd be a lot more efficient to do so and so forth.
Makes a lot of sense in a lot of ways, yeah.
Yeah. Now, so how many total family members are involved in the business at this point?
Well, you got myself, Tim, Lauren, Ben, Brian, and Courtney's actually part-time now, so.
Okay.
All of us together, there'll be six.
Yep. Okay. Well, that's still a pretty good nation's crowd there.
It is, yep.
And so you've got everybody, you've got this great family running this business, so, and everybody has their roles, and it sounds like everybody's doing different things, essentially.
Right.
And so what do you do to create kind of cohesiveness within the members that belong to the family? And I know you do a family council, but talk about if you do anything for the people that work in the business, and then if you do anything if there are any other shareholders outside of the business.
Well, we have some good people, obviously, some good long-term people that been with us 20, 30, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're in very responsible positions also.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have a executive council that these active family members are part of, as well as other senior management. And, you know, we're meeting all the time trying to obviously discuss situations and set directions and so forth. So it's a blending of the two, the family and existing employees.
Are there any shareholders that are within your family but that aren't active in the business?
Yes. Well, my brother and sister and I are the mm-hmm. primary shareholders.
Okay.
And neither one of them is active in the business. My brother's an attorney here in Atlanta, and
mm-hmm.
my sister's a retired teacher here in Atlanta.
Right.
But you know, one of the nephews is my brother's son, one's my sister's son.
Right.
So we all have some of the third generation involved in the business.
Is there a way that you communicate with them about what's going on with the business, or do you draw your brother and sister in at all to some of the family meetings, or?
Well, actually, we've reconfigured our board of directors mm-hmm. over the last few years, and that's made up now of my brother, sister, myself, and two outside directors.
That's great to get that perspective.
Yeah, it has been great, and so they're, you know, they're very involved. We have quarterly meetings, so they're involved in the big picture part of the business.
That is really, I've been considering they've had their own careers and so yeah. forth to be that active. The now, how do you guys reconcile kind of family time from business time? I mean, when you go to the nation's house for a Christmas dinner or whatever, is it all about B&D, or are you able to kind of delineate things?
Well, I think we do a pretty good job of keeping it separate. You know, there's got to be some discussion from time to time about right. business.
Right.
But we all enjoy each other. We enjoy doing things together. So, you know, you don't want to mix it too much.
Right,
you gotta have some time away.
How do you see, this is Gen 3. I mean, are the kids, I mean, again, they can't meet. They're not that much younger than I am, but they've got to start be having children. Obviously, you have some stay-at-home moms as right. daughters. How old are your grandchildren to where eventually they might be sweeping floors and stuff like that?
Well, we might get in trouble with child labor
yeah, exactly.
laws right now, but yeah, the oldest, we have four grandsons,
right,
and
okay.
The oldest is 5.
Got it.
The youngest is 2, so.
Yeah, the 2-year-old's not on sweep
yeah,
detail yet.
No, well, we do have one that's that seems to have a janitorial bent. He likes cleaning things up, so he may work into that for too long.
The what do you see? Let's in terms of the future, even outside the family, where do you see the business going? I mean, how do you see it changing over time? I mean, you've developed these branches; you're really in touch with what the demand is. Regionally, you're trying to create more of an international presence. Where do you see B&D going differently, and where do you see your industry going differently in the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, you know, it's hard to predict.
Right.
It
sure.
really is. It's you know, it's been a very similar situation for decades. You know, as everybody says, in all types of business, it's probably changed more in the last few years than it did in.
Right.
For our 20 or 30, but, you know, we are a considered regional distributor,
mm-hmm.
Which is the Southeast, which, although we have over 30 locations, we still see a lot of potential in the Southeast for growth. Now, when we get into some of our automation and what you might call the higher tech side of the business,
mm-hmm.
that tends to be more national because you'll do a job for a plant maybe in Georgia, and then they want to spread it to other plants. So,
sure.
So I think there's a good potential on that side of the business for growth.
How do you develop that, though? Do you just still headquarter it all out of Macon and just try to hire traveling sales guys, or?
Well, we haven't really done that yet. We've talked about having salespeople in different areas.
Mm-hmm.
But really, what it comes from now is just our existing salespeople and branch locations.
Right.
Because, you know, I don't know, we've got thousands of customers in the Southeast, and so there's a huge potential. A lot of those are either regional manufacturers or national or international manufacturers. So
right.
those relationships are what lead us into solutions and systems.
Right, and it seems like you could replicate them, like you said, just at the same plan. Like if you were doing a deal, and this is probably a bad example, but at the Kia plant, there might be other Kia plants around the country where if
right.
one sales guy drove that, he could potentially drive the other, and he would know what solution was developed by ostensibly one of your mega branches, essentially.
Yeah, well, just for example, a couple of years ago, we did a project for Coca-Cola, which, of course, based here. And it started here, and it
yeah.
was a machine, what you call a machine vision project. So mm-hmm. we were inspecting things on their conveyor line
okay.
as they came along. Well, they wanted to expand that to all those same types of plants around the country. So we ended up, I don't know how many states, but several states in the country, including Hawaii.
Right.
They have a plant. And of course, Hawaii was one everybody wanted to go to.
Yes, of course.
But it does start that way and then can certainly develop nationally. And we've had international systems going, again, usually to customers that we already had a relationship with.
Are you all, do you have clients or clients that have places in India? I know that's a big emerging in Brazil with a lot of the emerging market countries really developing out there.
Yeah, we have we have suppliers that are in India, mm-hmm. And we have some customers in Brazil. Mm-hmm. But it's as you said, it's booming out there in a lot of areas. Of course, Asia's booming. There are our distributors in Asia, mm-hmm. in China, particularly.
Mm-hmm.
We're not in China,
right?
But there's tremendous potential. Yes,
got it. So where do you see the nation's family from a business standpoint going in the next 10 to 20 years?
Well, we would like to, obviously we've got the third generation involved in the business. Mm-hmm. We'd love to see the business continue, mm-hmm. in the family, with that generation and then hopefully the one after that. And as you know, I'm sure it's unusual to have a family business that goes...
Gen 3 is like 1 or 2%, right, to be able to make it that far.
Go that far. But so that's what we'd like to see. And we've got some smart young family people, so don't see any reason we can't be successful.
Well, that sounds great. Well, something we do, Andy, as we approach kind of the end of each show, we always ask that our guests give us kind of three pearls of wisdom or tips. And I'm wondering if you could grace us with your wisdom and give us some good advice for other family businesses out there.
Let me just say this advice may be worth what you're paying for it, but I did think about that.
Which would probably be really expensive, right? Considering you're CEO of a very big company.
I did think about it some, actually coming up here this morning.
75 is good for that.
Yeah, it is, especially when you're stopped. But, there's three things I thought of that, and it's not anything new, but the first one really obviously applies to not just family business, but any business. But I think honesty, being open as possible, open as you possibly can be.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you need to be fair in the way you treat people, whether they're family or non-family. And communicating, I think, it's just so hard to, you cannot over-communicate. It's just so hard to do that well, especially when you're like us and you're spread out, over
right.
several states. So, again, that obviously holds true, I think, for all businesses. I think one thing for family business is important, has been important to me, is to develop relationships with other people in other family businesses.
Kind of best practices sort
right.
of thing.
Well, yeah. Best practices and just... just somebody in the same similar situations and, try to learn from their mistakes instead of having to make them yourself.
Right.
And we've been involved, as you know, with the Kennesaw State, the Cox Family Enterprise Center, and
mm-hmm.
that's been one area that we've met other family business people. So I think that's a good way to go. And then thirdly, and I mentioned this briefly earlier, but we did reconfigure our board of directors about 4 years ago, and we have the two, and actually looking for a third, but right now we have two outsiders,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is very important, whether it's a board of directors or an advisory board or some other method.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get outsiders that are not part of the family,
mm-hmm.
they're not reporting to the family.
Right.
So like they've
sort
got
of neutral positioning.
Right, neutral. They've got objective opinions and maybe they'll tell you some things that other people don't want to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a very important thing for a family business.
Well, that's great. You give us some great content, and certainly it sounds like things are going well. And I'd be interested to see, if we were talking 2 to 3 years from now, what would still change in your industry? Like
yeah,
you said,
well,
it's been so static for so long.
Yeah, well, it's right now the only thing you're sure of is it's going to change.
You know? Right, exactly. Exactly.
So I hope I'll be able to come back in 2 or 3 years and tell you what's changed.
Absolutely. Well, we would like to remind our listeners that, you know, we'll have the show up, the post show, next Tuesday or Wednesday. Annie, could you give us, if people wanted to get in touch with you, can you give us how they might contact you, email, phone, whatever?
Sure. Well, our company website is www.bdindustrial.com. Mm-hmm. I'm in Macon. Our telephone number there at the corporate headquarters is 478-746-7623. Or email, if you want to drop me an email, it's anations@bdindustrial.com. So if anybody's got any questions or comments, I'd love to hear them.
Well, that's great. Well, I appreciate you coming on today.
Thank you.
And again, listeners, you can always check stuff out next Tuesday or Wednesday at www.familybusinessradio.com. Thanks and have a great week.